We are still living in the wake of the thoughts, pain, and hopes that have accompanied us since Simchat Torah, October 7, 2023. As an Israeli, I am part of a society that wakes up each morning to an endless stream of opinions. Friends and social networks are filled with ideas from experts. It is natural to search for logic, to form opinions, and to believe that if we understand reality, we may understand what happened, and perhaps even offer insights for the future. This tendency toward constant opinion-making belongs, in the language of Jewish mysticism, to the tree of knowledge, the very tree from which we were forbidden to eat, Genesis chapters 2-3. Since we did, it has not left us. Our attachment to opinions is also an attempt to create a sense of security, much like much of the modern discourse of the mind, and it often arises from a survival instinct. By contrast, the consciousness of the tree of life, the state that was meant to define human life in the Garden of Eden, Genesis chapter 2 verse 9, engages less in knowing and more in meaning, experiencing life as a kind of delight, and living in light of a vision. Within this consciousness, we ask what history is asking of us. In the first temple period, this was the role of the prophets, to offer a broad perspective focused on meaning rather than detail. This is why the prophets criticized sacrifices when they replaced ethical relationships between people, e.g., Isaiah chapter 1 verses 11 to 17, Hosea chapter 6 verse 6. Our sages taught that from the day the temple was destroyed, prophecy was taken from the prophets and given to the wise, and some say, to fools and children, Babylonian Talmud, Bava Batra 12a. Indeed, the Jewish people have been guided for thousands of years by sages. For me, the return to Zion is not only the remarkable physical act of Jews returning to the land of Israel and establishing a unique state among the nations. First and foremost, it is the possibility of returning to the consciousness of the tree of life and to the original calling given to Abraham. Be a blessing, Genesis chapter 12 verse 2. This is the language of prophecy, not necessarily spoken directly by God, but what Rabbi Cook described as the buds of prophecy. This must be accompanied by humility. From the very beginning of Abraham's journey, we hear, "Go forth to the land that I will show you, and you shall be a blessing," Genesis chapter 12 verses 1-2. In none of the Abrahamic religions is there such a central connection to place as in Judaism, where the land itself becomes the foundation for creating a model of blessing. My parents came to Israel out of the ashes of Europe. They fought in the War of Independence and built a remarkable family shaped by diverse expressions of life. For them, the connection between the Holocaust and the establishment of the State of Israel was so powerful that it gave them the strength and resilience to move from being traumatized victims to Jews who take responsibility for their personal and collective lives. For me, October 7th is a new and sharp invitation to engage the next chapter, the purpose of the Jewish people as a whole, and of the State of Israel in particular. The questions of survival are many, and the Jewish people are doing extraordinary work in facing a harsh reality that continues even now. Yet, as a distant student of Viktor Frankl, I believe we must develop a special muscle, with one hand to deal with survival and recovery, and with the other to engage purpose and meaning. For me, that purpose is contained in the words, "Be a blessing." In the following lines, I seek to connect the idea of blessing to this place, the land of Israel, and to invite my brothers and sisters in the diaspora into a shared conversation. What is blessing? Blessing is a unique connection between the consciousness of the tree of life and the experience of tangible abundance in the world. This consciousness does not arise from reactivity, from rejecting the other, nor even primarily from a moral stance distinguishing between good and evil. Rather, it seeks to sense the meaning of events as processes of growth. It carries a deep awareness that all the abundance within us comes from God, and that we are privileged to serve as channels and messengers of that abundance, whether in money, sexuality, food, leadership, and more. Blessing is therefore connected to movement, to flow, like a river. The experience of God as a real presence in daily life creates a quality of delight, not merely pleasure, but a sense of touching the mystery of life. What, then, is the blessing of the land of Israel? In Moses' speech before entering the land, he says, "The land you are entering is not like the land of Egypt, where irrigation depends on human effort, but a land of hills and valleys that drinks water from the rain of heaven, Deuteronomy chapter 11 verses 10 to 11. This difference is essential. In Egypt, water is abundant and controllable. In the land of Israel, water depends on rain, on something beyond human control. And yet, this dependence is described as a blessing. I often ask business leaders, what would a blessed economy look like, one that depends on rain? After all, economic logic seeks control and risk reduction. Dependence seems to contradict that logic. The blessing of the land lies in the fact that a person must sow and reap, take responsibility for their livelihood, and then, at the festival of Sukkot, turn to heaven and say, I have done my part, now you do yours. See also Leviticus chapter 23 verses 33 to 44. Zechariah chapter 14 verses 16 to 17. The entire meaning of the festival is this turning toward God, asking for rain as a response to human effort. Thus, the essence of blessing lies in a foundational connection between heaven and earth, through the human being. This principle extends far beyond livelihood. It shapes appetite, refines desire, defines leadership, and deepens the ability to listen and hold disagreement. It is a complete way of life, rooted in the nature of the land, yet expressing a broader hope. And through you all the families of the earth shall be blessed, Genesis chapter 12 verse 3. Two biblical examples may help sharpen this idea. When Abraham and Lot separate, Lot chooses the Jordan Plain, described as, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, Genesis chapter 13 verse 10. This was a place of abundance, not dependent on rain. Lot sees and is drawn to it. Yet the people of Sodom are described as profoundly corrupt, Genesis chapter 13 verse 13. In a world of abundance, there is a real danger of forgetting God, of attributing success solely to human power. Unlike Lot, we are not meant to return to Eden as a geographical place. Such a return leads to corruption. This also helps explain the longing of the Israelites in the wilderness for Egypt, Exodus chapter 16 verse 3, Numbers chapter 11 verse 5, where there was stability, predictable food and control. A slave consciousness struggles to understand a land dependent on rain. Rain is bound up with freedom, with the willingness to release control, to breathe and to trust. Thus, life in the land of Israel represents a second innocence, more complex than the first. Where rivers are the source of abundance, they can become objects of worship, as the Nile did in Egypt. In contrast, the blessing of Israel comes from heaven, in response to human responsibility joined with humility. Another example emerges from the story of Cain and Abel, the farmer and the shepherd, Genesis chapter 4. Many have asked, what was Cain's sin? He brought an offering from the fruit of the ground, and Abel brought from the firstborn of his flock. The text does not clearly explain why God favored Abel's offering, Genesis chapter 4 verses 3 to 5. Thinkers such as Hillel Zeitlin and Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch suggested that scripture often favors the shepherd over the farmer. Shepherding cultivates sensitivity, care and humility, while agriculture can lead to possessiveness and the illusion of ownership. The farmer may become deeply attached to the land, even to the point of idolatry, forgetting God in the process. I respectfully disagree with these thinkers. I believe that from the very beginning of our tradition, we are asked to connect blessing to a place, with all its challenges. The Torah does not reject agriculture. It refines it, through Shabbat, Exodus chapter 20 verses 8 to 11, the sabbatical year, Leviticus chapter 25 verses 1 to 7, and the Jubilee, Leviticus chapter 25 verses 8 to 13, placing limits on ownership and restoring balance. As a modern society, we need to translate all this into contemporary life, across diverse professions and lifestyles. Each path contains both danger and possibility. In many ways, this reflects the relationship between Israel and the diaspora. The diaspora resembles the shepherd, dynamic, mobile and less tied to place and land. Israel resembles the farmer, rooted, sovereign and engaged with land and the challenges of power. The challenge is not to choose one over the other, but to create a balance. Jewish tradition offers a unique dance between responsibility and release, 6 days of work and 1 day of rest, 6 years of cultivation and 1 year of letting go. Ownership is tempered by humility. The return to the land of Israel is an invitation to renew this balance in our time. It is not only about survival, technological success, or military strength. It is about offering a new paradigm, a paradigm of blessing. This applies to capitalism, to the blessings and costs of technology, to intimacy and family life, to leadership, and to many other areas of our lives. For this, we return to the land of Israel. We are still far from fully realizing these challenges. Yet, as a father whose sons and sons-in-law have risked their lives since October 7, I draw strength from this sense of purpose, a resilience rooted in a vision of the future. It is this vision that motivates me to focus on the blessings of Jerusalem and the Temple Mount as a new path for addressing the Palestinian crisis. This may be a vision that can unite the many tribes within Israel who are in deep conflict. Jews in the diaspora must ask parallel questions. What is their purpose beyond successful Jewish continuity, survival, and support for Israel? How can a life of blessing be cultivated within a Western world shaped by very different assumptions? Can we imagine a shared calling to be a blessing, expressed in different ways? One emerging from Jewish sovereignty in the land of Israel, and the other from the global Babylon of our time? A shared purpose would allow our children, here and abroad, to speak not only about politics, governments, sports, and divisions rooted in the tree of knowledge, but about a shared experience of meaning and blessing. Future generations must live a Jewish life of meaning and vitality. And through you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed, Genesis chapter 12 verse 3. This ancient calling still awaits its full realization. Mordecai Bar-Or is founder of Elul and Kolot and author of the book, Be a Blessing. He is currently partner in the Blessing of Jerusalem Project.